And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's April 10th. That, of course, was one of our favorites, the Ballad of the Green Mountaineer. From the early years of the American Revolution, the dream that embraces all freedom-loving men and women and children everywhere, in every culture, every indigenous culture, every present culture, the dream of self-governance that's born within us. Well, today we have the embodiment of that dream come alive. Our program is about a new alliance that is formed in Kanata, formerly the Dominion of Canada, between our Republic of Kanata, embracing non-Indigenous settler peoples in Canada, and the Chilcotin National Congress in what is still called British Columbia. It's central British Columbia, the traditional Chilcotin territory. This coming week, there will be a treaty signed between our two nations, and it will be a treaty to recognize each other and to help one another claim back the country for all of our people within our own sovereign jurisdictions. I'm honored to have with me today Suzanne Holland, who is a co-signatory with me and others in this treaty. And today we're going to talk about the treaty and what it means on the ground for transforming our nations, taking back our nations from the global corporatocracy. We're here every Sunday at this hour, murderbydecree.com, republicofkanata.org. Now today, especially important day for two reasons. 14 years ago today, we did an action with Indigenous people in Vancouver that really brought down the roof. It was the thing that forced the apology back in 2008 when we occupied Holy Rosary Catholic Cathedral and we saw those Catholic priests run out the back door. And then the next week, the government announced a, quote, apology for Indian residential school massacre. We realize that direct action and people taking back their sovereignty is the only way to go. Our treaty will be promulgated this Friday, April 15th, and that too is another very important day. It's the 17th anniversary of the first Aboriginal Holocaust Memorial Day in Vancouver, and again, that started the whole movement that really forced the truth of genocide out and really led to the founding of the Republic. The Republic of Kanata, those non-Indigenous people who say that we cannot be part of the Crown jurisdiction anymore or have anything to do with these murderous churches that committed such heinous crimes and murdered 60,000 innocent children. So we've separated ourselves in our own republic, and we're joining hands with traditional Indigenous nations. Now, the Chilcotin people themselves have suffered horribly from genocide. For people who don't know, the only war ever waged for a long period of time, besides the Métis Rebellion in the Red River area, was the Chilcotin Wars in the 1860s and 70s. Suzanne Holland's people, they waged a war against the colonial forces because those forces of church and state and big money were wiping out their people through smallpox injections. If you go to Appendix 10 in our book, Murder by Decree, that's murderbydecree.com, you'll read about germ warfare in British Columbia. Now, the Anglican Church, through its missionary John Sheepshanks, and the Hudson's Bay Company, through its agent Francis Poole, went around the Chilcotin area, and in less than a month, in the summer of 1864, forced smallpox injections on the Chilcotin people, 90% of whom then died. And their shareholders in the Puget Sound Agricultural Company then bought up all the land, what's now Quesnel, British Columbia. That whole area in Chilcotin territory was nearly wiped out by that medical genocide. And of course, that genocide is continuing today through the COVID drug genocide as well. So that continuity of mass murder carries on. But our answer to it is that we are taking back our nations and disestablishing that genocidal system. It's really a civil war we're in, brothers and sisters. And we're going to be talking today about how that civil war is taking flesh in our sovereign nations. Now, let me bring on Suzanne at this time. Hello, Suzanne.
Hi, Kevin. Greetings to you and to all your listeners today. I'm so excited to be here again.
I'm very excited to have you back. I know it's been a few months. We had you on originally talking about kind of your situation and the whole dream of your people and establishing the Chilcotin National Congress. But for those who didn't hear those interviews, why don't you say a little bit about your nation and something of the treaty that we're in the process of signing this week?
Oh, yes, I would love to. So the Chilcotin National Congress is the hereditary governance for the state of the Chilcotin. which declared its independence from Canada in 2016 via Grand Chief Stanley Stubbs Sr., who then went ahead and today we are forming alliances with wonderful people like the Republic of Canada, and we're recognizing the statehood of the Republic of Canada and their sovereignty, their independence. And so we are working together with many nations who are under, basically are on the jurisdiction of our two countries. And so that includes the people of the Salmon. It includes the First Law of the Land Tribunal, which encapsulates all the large nations in the northwest of Turtle Island. So we're so happy that we are able to form these alliances and strengthen our causes for fighting for justice and freedom and sovereignty for all. So in essence, what's happening to it with our alliance agreement is that it will reverberate hugely for other nations, other sovereign nations as well, in establishing their freedoms, their right to sovereignty. And so this is great for everybody, what's happening with what is proceeding right now. And so what we're looking at is that between our two nations, we are recognizing each other's sovereignty, and we're also recognizing each other's courts. So that is really, really wonderful to see, because on the state of the Chilcotin, we have the Chilcotin National Congress has established in 2015 an international multi-level court system. So it's a whole brand new system created by Indigenous people and totally separate from existing systems. So this multi-level court system is called the Universal Supreme Court of the Chilcotin, or Universal Supreme Court for short. And it recognizes the International Common Law Court of Justice. It recognizes the Supreme Court of the Republic of Canada. And so basically, we are strengthening our ability to govern ourselves, to self-determine. And it's just such a wonderful time to be able to participate in actually moving forward with everybody's well-being. This is for everybody.
Right. That's the point, I think. You know, all I very much know from long experience that we both had and many people have had in the struggle, to know that when you take a step forward on your own rather than waiting for, you know, petitioning or protesting the powers that be, that's where our power lies in our own direct action. And I'm really excited about it. I want to go through kind of details of the treaty with you during the hour. But, you know, the thing you mentioned about the court, it's very exciting because we find that in history, when revolutions happen and people take back their nations, one of the first things they do is they set up their own courts. I remember in Ireland, my people, when we broke away from the British Empire, the very first thing the Irish Republicans did is they set up their Brehon Law courts. That's Gaelic law, not the European Roman law. They began right under the nose of the British. They operated their own courts and set up kind of a dual power situation in every community. And I see that happening now from the grassroots in both our nations.
Yes, I see it too. Like I said, the First Law of the Land Tribunal is another court, Indigenous court. Your Republic of Canada court system is another court system. We have several court systems, not only here in the Chilcotin, we have the Universal Supreme Court. That's the only one so far. created by Indigenous people. But then, of course, our southern neighbors have created their own courts as well. We are reaching out to them, asking them to join us in forming treaties and alliances. So we are looking to reach out to all Native nations, Turtle Island at this time, and we are trying to form alliances. For example, we have reached out to the Anishinaabeg in Ontario, who is also also created their own court system as well. So, and we're working together with all nations at this time, starting to form treaties where we can trade and we can carry on our nation's business. And I think it's a wonderful alternative to the existing system that, is definitely broken.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that I should mention to you, I think I have, but I know the listeners know that on July 1st to 4th, there's an international convention happening of people in nine different nations who want to set up common law sovereign republics outside the whole present corporate system. And, you know, the whole COVID thing has really spurred this on, but it's like a hundredth monkey thing happening all over the planet. Like, I had a call with people in Russia and Sweden the other day, and they're doing exactly that on their own. The idea that the people should govern themselves now has sprouted up. And there's this global revolution happening, and it's great to be part of it. And I know that one of the things I did want to flag as well is there's been stuff in the news about so-called Pope Francis has issued this apology, and there's already an arrest warrant out against him, as you know, and there is a pledge by your nation and ours to cooperate in his arrest if he comes to our territory. So do you want to talk, kind of comment on that at all?
Absolutely, yes. We are all about justice. We are absolutely supporting the International Common Law Court, who issued indictments against the Pope and his crimes and the crimes of the Church. We do not accept the apology as being justice served. I think that those people who are seeking an apology must remember that justice does not stop with an apology. Justice demands that these crimes are going to be dealt with. Justice demands that that the Pope himself needs to do time for his crimes. He is not above the law. Nobody is. And the first law of the land, or the native courts are the first law of the land. So the native system is basically law, and it would be good for all native people as well as non-native people to familiarize themselves with native law, because native law could you could find that it's very beneficial in making sure that justice is served efficiently and dealt with properly according to natural law. And so one thing that I would like to mention is that I know that the Pope thinks that he may want to come to this hemisphere, and I do support his arrest, and I think what will need to happen is that the indictments and arrest warrants against him have to be dealt with everybody knows that the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, are the law enforcers in what people know as Canada. And so, hence, because their mandates are to enforce the law, and that includes Indigenous native law as well, because the first law of this land is indigenous law. And so what needs to happen is that those indictments, those arrest warrants against the Pope, must be served upon the RCMP, and at their headquarters, the leaders in charge of the RCMP department need to be well informed that it is their duty under law to enforce the law, and that includes indigenous law. So what has to happen under law is that the RCMP have to enforce those indictments against Pope Francis. And so if they do not enforce law, then their mandate has been breached, and the RCMP become of no force and effect, and they'll become a nullity in this land. So the Republic of Kanata and the Chilcotin State need to work with the RCMP at this time to enforce our laws and to enforce our court rulings.
Well, it gets interesting about that, because when you look at the, and I urge people to go to murderbydecree.com under the title ITCCS Updates, and then you go to the January 15th posting, you'll see the verdict of the court that convicted Ratzinger and all the others. Well, if you look at the list of 75 people who were indicted and convicted and who now face arrest, it includes about six top officers of the RCMP, because, as you know, the RCMP are the ones who carted off the children to these death camps they call residential schools and then hunted them down. They often buried children. So the top officers of the RCMP are themselves under arrest warrants. And so I agree with you, all the police have to be appealed to. And what we say to them is disavow that oath of allegiance to the criminally convicted monarch Elizabeth Windsor and take it to our people in your territory, to the Chilcotin National Congress, otherwise to the Republic of Kanata. Because you see, their own top officers are convicted of these crimes. It's like what we say to priests and people in the pews on Sunday, don't give money, break away. You know, you don't have to be part of these guilty institutions and their top officers. So that's something really important for people to remember. But again, read over that, you know, the original judgment, folks, and that's all in there. Another thing, and before we get into the details of the treaty, because there's some really interesting stuff in here I want to share with people. I think we should both, you know, talk about this. But people, somebody sent me a message. Ask Suzanne to tell us a little bit about what it's like in her territory. Is it mountainous? Is it for just a description of what your land is like and some of your own history so people can kind of put it in context?
Okay, yes. Our boundaries lie between the 50th and 53rd and a half parallel along the coast, along the coastline, and then just west of Kamloops, the Tikamloops Band, where the residential school massacres occurred, is our eastern border all the way up to McBride area. So that is the extent of the territory for the state of the Chilcotin. And compared to the Republic of Kanata, we're pretty small, but we do feel very strongly that we need to assist to uphold everybody's rights, and that includes everybody on our territory, as well as work with those who are not on our territory. And so we have a few towns, Williams Lake, Quesnel, Huddermau House, Clinton, Cache Creek, Lillooet, and Bella Coola are some of our towns. They're still quite small compared to a city such as Kamloops, for example, that we're nowhere near big as that. But we do feel very strongly about getting back to nature, getting back to helping people live healthier lives. The Universal Supreme Court had issued orders, of course, to that effect. We can go into that a little bit later if you want. But physically, we have two plateaus that encompass the majority of our territory. We have what's called the Caribou Plateau and then the Chilcotin Proper Plateau. So that the Chilcotin Proper Plateau is the highest plateau, and that's everything pretty much west of the Fraser River. And the Caribou Plateau is located on east of the Fraser River. As the river flows through our land, going down to the lower mainland, the Chilcotin River from the glaciers on the west coast mountains kind of flows into the Chilcotin River and into the Fraser. We have lots and lots space, wilderness. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. The people are wonderful here, and it's just such a joy to be living here. We do have, like I say, some coastline, so we do have some sea level territory, such as is located in the Lillooet area. It gets quite hot in the Linton-Lillooet area. You heard about the Linton, Linton fires. So that happened on our territory. It gets hot down towards the south, but we do have high elevations for our plateaus, ranging anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 feet above sea level for these plateaus. Lots of wilderness area, and it's just a great place to live and a great place to visit.
That sounds like it. And, of course, we're about to jump into the treaty, and we're going to talk about mutual trade and all of that stuff. But one final thing, I got another email from someone about clarify about how the verdict of the International Common Law Court actually causes all of the land of the British Crown, which is all of Canada, and all of these guilty churches, the Catholic, Anglican, United Churches that murdered so many of our children, their land is forfeited, so, and their property and assets. So we're on our territories, and we've passed a law in our various assemblies in the Republic of Canada saying that anywhere in Canada, these church properties are forfeited. They can be lawfully seized and taken over. Now, people are often asking, you know, we don't have meeting space. We don't have the assets and stuff. Well, we can lawfully now seize all of those properties and the properties of the Crown because they're convicted criminal associations. So, you know, the sky's the limit here. It's just a matter of mobilizing people, let them see that now the power is in our hands. We've got the law on our side. And I wanted to, one final point before we get into the treaty. There's also a thing, clarify what apology means, and I can't resist. I've got to mention this. Under the law, an apology is not saying I'm sorry. If you look it up in Webster's Dictionary, it says an apology or an apologetic is to defend your action. Okay? So yeah. Here's more brainwashing that goes on. When someone, you notice Bergoglio didn't say I'm sorry. He said I issue an apology. What that means under the law is that he's not sorry, he's defending what they did, and by doing that, they're legally indemnifying themselves. They say we're not liable for damages or prosecution. That's what an official apology is. So in other words, he's not saying what we all think he's saying. He's actually saying we're off the hook now legally by this apology. So, and he's lying, of course, because he's already been convicted under international law. So, you know, the whole thing is smokescreen, and people should not be fooled by that word apology. And I just thought I should mention again for folks to remind them of everyone listening of that fact. It's easy to be kind of, if we watch the so-called mainstream too much, we can be sucked in by these terms, but that's what it means lawfully. That's how they operate, according to that meaning of that term. Now let's get into the treaty, Suzanne. I wanted to, since you were talking about the land, one of the things in the treaty is that we will endeavor, our two nations, to establish trade and commerce. And in gold and silver, native currency in gold and silver, not fiat or our other forms of currency. Do you want to talk about that whole thing of how we develop our economies?
Yes, exactly. That is a good point, that we want to make sure that our currencies are backed by gold or silver and not we don't want to deal in fiat currency. I understand, you know, at this time, those people who want to invest in our nations will have to do so using fiat currency. But like I was speaking to our Chilcotin Minister of Justice the other day, and just advising her that it is time that she start thinking about developing their native currency. So native currency is how we will be ultimately operating. It's a time of transition right now away from the fiat currency into some substantive currencies that actually have value, and that is gold-backed and silver-backed, and also we are looking at you know, backing through our resources and developing those resources as well. So we want to make sure that everybody gains and benefits from the economies that exist that our nations can provide. And we want to, for example, the Chilcotin State, one of their goals is to eradicate poverty 100%, and I believe that it can be done. It just has to be done wisely and frugally. So that means that because we have a low administrative costs, those costs with respect to our resources and the revenues that our nations can acquire, much of the profit sharing can be put back into the hands of the people, and that's what we're looking at doing here as a model template for other nations is how to better look after each one of our citizen quote members. We don't like to call each other citizens because we're just members. We all have the same rights. Nobody is better than someone else. And so we want to make sure that everybody is looked after financially, that there's not going to be anybody in hardship situations. We want to make sure that everybody who is able to and everybody should be employed, that can be employed. There's lots of things people can do with their various talents that need to be developed, and we're looking at trying to help facilitate every home or family's well-being, economically speaking. And so we have lots of new incentive programs for our members, and we certainly want to extend those same relations to the Republic of Canada and to other nations who treaty with us. We want to make sure that they're going to be able to benefit from the resources that they have when they trade with us, and that they are well looked after financially as well, and that in essence everybody is going to benefit. It's a mutual benefit for all of us.
Now, that's right along the philosophy and laws that we're passing within the Republic of Canada. And I'm just looking at our constitution, which people, again, can see online, republicofcanada.org. And the founding statement in the economic section is, "The lands, waters, and seas of Canada and their industries and wealth belong collectively to all of the people. This natural birthright cannot be alienated or taken from the people by any law, statute, or authority, whether foreign or domestic." And I think that's a really important principle because, it's like you just said, there's no reason why one person should have more than another it's not the natural law. It's not the indigenous way. It's not the way of common law. And we have to ensure that equality, not through big government, not through state intervention, but by the people cooperatively owning the economy themselves. And that's really a foundational principle. And I think, you know, we're talking along the same lines there.
Wonderful. Yes, we totally agree with that.
Okay. We also abolish income tax. We say taxes will be levied according to the wealth created. And you know, so these are, in a way, common sense things, but, of course, no government in the world today is going to advocate for that. And so, you know, it's really in the hands of all of us to create this kind of grassroots democracy. Also, another point is we abolish foreign ownership of the economy. So that's a very important one where you are on the West Coast, because the Chinese are buying up the whole country thanks to the Trudeau government and its Foreign Investment Protection Act, which removed all limit on Chinese investment in Canada and even allows them to station troops on Canadian soil. And we know around Prince Rupert and the Superport, they're operating openly. So this whole thing of foreign ownership, we need to reclaim the country for the indigenous people and the ones born here first, and use this as a bulwark against this kind of imperial takeover that's happening. You know, first it was the British, then the Americans, now it's the Chinese coming in from the West.
Right. And I just want to add to that. We welcome investors on our territory. That is not a problem. However, ownership will never change from the hands of the people who own the land. That cannot change. So, yes, you know, we welcome investors. We welcome those who want to abide by our laws and by, you know, just common sense transactions and whatnot. We definitely welcome investors, but as far as ownership, that can never change.
Right. Now, it's interesting because I don't want to mention the indigenous nations, but there's three other ones that have been in negotiations with the Republic for a number of months. And I know they're going to be encouraged and sparked by what comes out this week when we announce the treaty between our two nations. But one of the things that is really exciting is that this is really the birth, again, of a federation of equal nations. And that was, you know, in the Tuʻuru Wampum, which we have in our flag, the original Tuʻuru Wampum Treaty between the European settlers and the different indigenous nations in the East. The idea is that the land was to be shared together in common, not one culture over the other. And to really undo genocide, this is why the Republic was formed, to undo that legacy of genocide. We found you cannot get justice in their system because it's controlled by the very forces that caused the genocide and keep protecting themselves. And, you know, so we've got to undo that legacy of genocide with this new federation of equal nations. And that's really the vision of Canada. And I know that's why it's so easy for us to form this treaty, because it's one of equal partners.
Yes. Yes. It's a great time to be alive, to be able to do this for everybody. And it's a great opportunity. And unfortunately, Canada has basically shown who their true colors, as it were, and you know, it's not a good thing what's happening under their system, and it's nice to be able to offer a solution, and that is our alliances, our collective cooperative agreements, and so that is a blessing, I believe, from our Heavenly Father, from our Creator, that you know, He has set this in motion at a time like this, where people can turn to an alternative, can find relief and solutions to a very, very real problem that's happening out there in every area of life. We are seeing that these people are committing these crimes, and you know, they have to be dealt with. They have to they have to be replaced.
And now let's bring that up to the whole COVID tyranny going on, because of course, as I mentioned in the introduction, your people are very familiar with genocide and smallpox because it wiped out 90% of you in the 19th century. And that's carrying on today. I mean, under the Indian Act, people on reservation cannot refuse medical treatment. They try out, big pharma and the churches have been trying out their drugs, including COVID and the swine flu and these other drugs, for generations. They just go onto the reservation and stick it in the arm of a child and see what happens. This medical genocide is why the COVID drug is now being banned by our court order of January 15th. And so it's interesting, Suzanne. I've gotten, every day I do calls with people, you know, Zoom calls all over the world. I was just talking to a group in Holland today who translated that order. They just went into a series of pharmacies in Utrecht, which is a city in Holland, and they've seized all the COVID drugs and they had the police stand by and watch. The police didn't intervene because they saw it was a lawful court order. They say this drug is a result of testing on children, medical genocide that caused their death. And we even have researchers now on Vancouver Island who have found the mass graves of people who have died as recently as 2019 who died in these secret drug testings that the Chinese are doing on the West Coast. You know, wow. And so this is a crime happening now, and why our nations have to stop it. So I just want to mention that to show that it's very relevant. People can say no to the COVID shots and everything using our warrants and standing under the sovereignty of our two respective nations.
Yes, yes, and that likewise, the Universal Supreme Court in December 2020 had issued this order. Due to the COVID genocide fraud, I hereby order that no human beings, civilians, can be compelled to undergo forced COVID vaccinations or vaccinations of any kind forthwith. So few people know that they are protected under our rulings, under our laws. And so I just hope people out there can support by getting this information to the hands of everybody. Everybody needs to know. They are protected under our court rulings, and it's good to hear that people in Holland are standing with these orders and asserting their rights to be protected under these orders. And so I believe that everybody has the same rights to those protections, and certainly they need to just exercise them at this point.
Right. Well, it's Holland, it's England, France, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the U.S. I mean, there's a host of countries that are using our warrants to do that. We've had to translate it into five languages. And So the Indigenous nations in Canada especially need to get on board because they're targeted and have been targeted by this apartheid Indian Act for generations. And so it's time to step out of all that, and I think that's not only possible now, but necessary, because under our treaty, and here's another point we should talk about, we're obligated to defend and support each other. Our two nations, when we're being attacked or when we're under pressure, we're obligated to stand by each other in every way possible. So it's really a pact of mutual protection as well. It isn't just a nice idea on paper. Any comments? Hello, Susanna, are you there?
Hi, I'm back. Sorry, my phone just went dead all of a sudden, so I don't know if that
well,
was...
Well, I thought, here comes the RCMP, but no, you're back. That's good. And by the way, any Mounties listening in, disavow the oath of allegiance to Elizabeth Windsor. She's a convicted criminal. Take it to our republic and to the sovereign Kilchoko nation. Carry on. Did you hear what I mentioned about mutual protection?
I did not. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, we're obligated under our treaty to support each other, to defend each other. It isn't just a piece of paper. We have to help each other when either of us are under attack, and that's part of the strength of this treaty. And as it extends to other nations, it'll become even more firm, that mutual protection.
Yes, and we have international bodies around the world right now looking at what's happening in Canada and how Canada is treating us, the Chilcotin, as well as the Republic of Canada. And so people are waking up to the seriousness of what's going on here, and how the crime that has been now ongoing for so many decades now is coming to the forefront. People in very influential and powerful positions are taking a look at what is Canada really doing, and it's very, very sad for Canada that they have abused their powers the way they have. It is very sad that that they've committed these crimes. However, the crimes have been done, and justice has to be served. So,
right, and you know the reality is, Suzanne, under the law and under the establishment of our two nations, Canada's a dead letter. You know, it's a convicted criminal body under the Crown and the Vatican. They're two paymasters, and you know, the truth is now we have to build something different. So, putting our eyes to the future now, down that road of what we build now, is what we keep trying to orient people to. And in that regard, too, I wanted your thoughts about the whole thing of how we gather people together, because I know in the Republic, one of the things that's building us so quickly on the ground is we form these assemblies. 12 or more people sign a charter, then they can then pass their own laws in their own community under the umbrella of the Republic. And thoughts or experience you've had in just kind of that community level organizing, how we kind of put boots on the ground on all these issues, right?
Yes, definitely. The way that I started working for the Chilcotin National Congress is that I was requested to assist in developing the constitution of the Chilcotin Nation. And so that's how I started working for the nation, because they were looking to get their children back from the Ministry of Children and Family Development, who were stealing their children unlawfully. And so that was my first line of business, was when I was appointed in 2015 to my position. That was my first line of business, was to, you know, make sure that the women, children, men were all looked after, and you know, develop your own constitution. And you know, that's something that we, as in our agreement, have recognized. The Chilcotin people recognize the constitution of the Republic of Canada and vice versa. So that's probably the best place to start.
That's right. And, you know, we find that the more people do that, the more confident they get, because we found, yeah. I mean, for example, 5 years ago, there was an opinion poll done, and 58% of Canadians wanted a republic. They don't want ties with the British Crown anymore, and their whole colonial system where the governor general, one person is the official head of state. Well, no, the people are sovereign, not one man or woman. So we have the majority of people on our side, but they're kind of waiting and seeing what happens to those of us out in front here who establish, you know, the Constitution. Are we going to end up like, you know, half of the signers of the Declaration of Independence suffered horribly for taking on the British Empire, and yet somebody had to break the ice. So any thoughts on that? We've got about 5 minutes left, so that and kind of round up, wind up with any websites or any other announcements you want to make, and we'll go on more next week.
Yes, for sure. So basically, we just trust in God, trust in our Creator, and let the consequences fall where they may. As leadership, you have to take the first step. You have to, even at the risk of your own life, which I think, you know, we all agree on that it is a huge risk. We have several attempts at by Canada and the New World Order and also probably the Catholic Church itself try to do us harm. But you know, praise God, we're still here. We're going to keep going while we still have life and breath. Everybody's life depends on it and their well-being. So we don't worry about consequences to ourselves as leadership. We have to worry about everybody else and what happens to them, as well as I want to direct the attention of people to the Montevideo Convention on the Rights and Duties of State, Article 3. The political existence of the state is independent of recognition by other states. Even before recognition, the state has the right to defend its integrity and its independence, to provide for its conservation and prosperity, and consequently to organize itself as it sees fit, to legislate upon its interests, administer its services, and to define the jurisdiction and competence of its courts. So I refer to the Montevideo Convention on the Rights and Duties of State, which was referred to on the Declaration of Independence by Grand Chief Stanley Stumpp Sr. in 2016. So these rights are everybody's rights. They're not right. Just you know, our rights, they're everybody's rights. And it's time that people know their rights and assert them.
That's a wonderful thing to point out. And next week, and I hope you'll come back, I want to go into more detail about the Montevideo Convention, because it's essential to, you know, what you just said. We don't need permission from anyone, is what it's saying. We have our own innate right to self-govern. And I want to thank you, Suzanne, for coming on today and for your excellent work as a co-signatory to this treaty. Now, it's this week it'll be promulgated later in the week, April 15th, and then we'll have copies on that, and maybe next Sunday we can go into more of the details of that. Any websites or anything you want to announce before I sign you off?
What people can find, whatever they need on your website. I think we'll link on to your website, and that'll be great.
Thank you, Suzanne, for being on. We'll see you again next week.
Okay. God bless.
Take care. You. Bye-bye. Bye for now. Suzanne Holland, ambassador and co-signatory from the Chilcotin National Congress to the treaty that's coming out this week. We are going to put up a posting on republicofkanata.org under ITCC's updates and, sorry, I got that backed up, republicofkanata.org site under breaking news, and murderbydecree.com under ITCCS updates, our two main websites. There'll be a posting of that. We're holding a joint press conference to announce this to the world and to encourage other Indigenous nations to affiliate with our republic and do background reading. Go to those two websites, republicofkanata.org, murderbydecree.com. There's on the republic site, there's the Oath of Citizenship you can take out, write to Republic National Council at protonmail.com. Not only to take out citizenship, but to form a local republic cell or assembly, which establishes self-governance in your neighborhood, and then you can start passing laws like the law we passed early in the after the COVID tyranny broke out, and that was to ban all COVID measures across Canada under the jurisdiction of the republic. Those things are being enforced as we speak. It's a time of great hope, brothers and sisters, and I just want to end with a memory, of course. This day, 14 years ago, I stood almost right about now in the outside Holy Rosary Cathedral that we had just occupied in downtown Vancouver. And with me was William Coombs, my brother, who had gone through the horror of the residential school torture. He had seen Queen Elizabeth kidnap 10 children who were never seen again. He talked about it, subsequently was murdered in St. Paul's Hospital for it. But I remember that day. He had been so terrified, he couldn't even go near a Catholic church because of the sound of the church bells would literally make him vomit because of how he was tortured on a rack with a cattle prod at a young age by Catholic priests at the Kamloops school, something that no apology can ever cover any more than I can cover the murder of 60,000 or more children. The judgment is coming on the people who did this and are still doing it. But that day, William standing out there with me, the tears in his eyes, that was the real victory that day, because he said, I asked him, how could you come into the church? You were so scared of coming in. He said, I didn't want to let you guys down. I wanted to be there with you. And I realized then the way we heal, brothers and sisters, is we do it together. We don't do it paying an expensive counselor. You know, we don't do it by reading stuff on the internet. It's our hand-to-hand witness together. That's our source of our great human strength. It's overcome every tyranny that's ever existed in history through that human solidarity. You've heard on a bigger scale some of that solidarity today as our two nations, the Republic of Canada and Chilcote National Congress, formally affiliate in a mutual protection treaty. Those treaties will continue, but only if more of you get involved. We have been the leadership tip of the spear on this, and like Suzanne said, I am not afraid of giving up my life, as I have in so many ways already, for this cause. I need all of you to lose your fear as well and step forward. Don't think anymore of what you might lose if you take that step. Think of the children who will die if you don't, including your own children, and that'll give us the encouragement. We have to break from slavery. And in that sense, we want to end with this very inspiring song. That's about John Brown's body, because as in the American Civil War, we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether our republic, so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure in the face of the COVID corporatocracy. It will endure through the grace of God and the inspiration of every one of us. So here's an inspiration song to leave you all. Come back next week, and we will carry this on with Suzanne. This is Kevin Andy, Eagle Strong Voice. I thank you.